just in case.
Strong for that.
Well, the urge like to get up and change is real.
That's also I'm sitting down already. I'm not going to get up.
That's
too much.
Too much
warm. My apartment is warm for some reason. If it was cooler, I would have put my sweater on. But
your apartment's warm. Your apartment's always like an refrigerator.
An ice cube.
Yeah. It's quite warm.
So I wonder if it's warm for Anna. It's just normal for everybody else.
Yeah, so we'll be like fine.
It's because I don't have my fan on because it's so loud. So there's no air circulating. So it just feels very like stiff and stuffy in here. I hate that feeling.
Stiff and stuffy. Feels like a very British.
I like my nose.
When I stayed the night there a couple weeks ago, I stupidly didn't bring like pants or shorts or something or a sweater. And I was like, what was I thinking? It's freezing in here. Duh. So like I went to the closet and got like all the blankets. And so I was like putting it on top of me and I was like, I was literally shivering. It was so cold in there. I turned the fan off and I was like,
My living room gets much. Well, plus you were by the windows and the door to the patio, but my room does not get as cold as my living room does. So
I guess in my head I thought, because it was cold that day and I thought, oh, she'll have the heater on so it'll be warm in there. But no, it was really cold. And I was like, I feel like I'm sleeping outside.
I hate the heater.
I know you do. I don't know what I'm thinking.
The feeling of the heater on, I feel like it's like sitting on my chest and I hate it. So I keep, if I have to have the heater on, it's usually pretty low.
Also, the next night after that, I think you went to bed too early and forgot to turn the air off or something. Because we were cooking. That time I brought like a sweater, like a t-shirt and pants. So I was like, layer up, all the blankets on me.
Yeah.
And then I got cozy and I was like, oh, no, I have to pee. Oh,
oh no, that's the worst.
Hang off. Anyways.
You know what's funny is I keep thinking like, I need to put away this air mattress. And then you're like, hey, I'm coming over this week. I'm like,
oh, sorry.
No,
it's clear your living room.
Girl, this place is a mess. But it's my bad for not putting it away like the next day. So it's like every time I'm like, that's why I didn't put it away. Because she's coming back.
Never leaving. No, I have to.
She always comes back. She's so sweet. Aww.
Boomerang. Yeah.
We love a good Australian tool thing. Not from Montreal, it's from Australia.
Are you writing Australian?
I mean, movies that I watched in the 90s made me think that they were, so maybe.
Okay, hold on. Before we move on, we have to.
Yeah, Anna's got to look it up. She can't leave.
Boomerang's native to Australia.
Googleia.
Google Mbatara.
Speaking of Google, have you ever had goulash?
No.
That's what I'm eating right now.
It's like you made it?
Well, my mom did. It's like a pasta, hamburger meat, cheese, tomato-y, onion-y, garlicky thing.
Ooh, it's like a throw everything in the pot thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
So a non-returning boomerang is a weapon that was traditionally used by Aboriginal Australians. But ancient boomerangs have also been discovered elsewhere in Africa, the Americas, and Eurasia. But it is most commonly associated with Australia.
Australia. Aboriginal Australians.
The more you know.
Yay. We're like a PSA for everything. You learn everything here. You learn about, weather patterns, sleeping habits, crop tops, all of it.
Jesus.
Australia. The difference between Montreal. Australia and Montreal. Shout out to our best friend, Shari. Shari.
Hey.
Brr, brr, brr. And also shout out to our new followers on Instagram. Thanks, family and friends. I don't know if you're actually going to listen to this. That's fine. But thanks for following at least. Because we have at least one fan.
Not fine, but.
That's one more than mine over here. So that's great.
Yeah. Well, technically we have two fans because Fried Puppy, that still like retweets us on Twitter and stuff. True. So they're super cool. And
I'm surprised they're not on Litterbox. I looked them up. And I need to go into it, but
we should add them on Twitter and be like, hey, Do you have a letterbox? And also, what is it? Because I would love to follow.
Maybe it's a secret one or something, which I get.
Okay.
Well, not to sound like a creep, but I found it, and they just haven't updated it in a long time.
Alana, the old creeper.
Oh, my God. That's just like a side hobby, you know? Just to...
Well, no, because I was on it last night after I saw a movie, and... I had this thought. I was like, wow, I haven't even thought about looking them up on Letterboxd. So I did, but they're not active.
Oh.
Stalker, creepy, investigative reporter, whatever.
Yeah, you know, we've all done our share of investigative reporting. We're just really smart.
Is it stalking to look up a friend on social media? Not really.
Not really.
Okay, no. Sorry. Your words were creepy, so my bad.
She looks up creep, but not stalker. That's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Tomato, tomato. So I guess welcome to our new followers. Hey.
Hey.
Bah, bah, bah. Can you hear that?
Kind of, yes. There we go. Shout out.
I wish I still had that app that had the soundboard on it.
Oh, I know. That was fun.
Oh, that's cool. Well, every time welcome.
I went to close out of it, it went, no.
Yeah, that was my favorite part.
Wait, that was like years ago. You still have it?
That was at the house.
Is that the one? Or no?
No. She says she wishes she still had it.
Oh, okay.
There's joy not listening again.
Ears, okay? There's again, a lot of
why don't you have headphones? You are deaf.
Because I can't connect them to my computer and then I have to do it on my phone.
They have headphones that made for your computer, ma'am.
And you can buy some.
And I forget about that. I forget things, okay? Just like my ears can't hear stuff sometimes. I forget things. I need it. No, I forgot already.
She can't remember. She can't hear. She can't see. She can't walk. I can't walk. Jeez.
Basically, I'm growing into my old age now, so, you know. Or I have been slowly maturing fast over time.
Which is what aging is.
Oh, no, Joy's been growing up.
Hey, look, I have a planner now that I use semi-regularly.
I remember when we were living together and we both got a planner and she didn't even touch hers and I was, like, slightly offended, like, Joy, we're doing this together. The hell? Anyways.
Well, I'm using it now because I have to know when we're recording stuff. Although I forgot that Past Lives is coming up Sunday. I thought it was American Fiction on Sunday. But that's fine. I'll make time for Past Lives. Because I would love to watch it again.
But anyways. Already? Okay, good. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Hi, new followers. Hi, old followers. Hi, fans. Hi, non-fans, enemies, people that don't like us. I don't know. We don't care about you. Welcome back to We Have Thoughts, a podcast about movies. I'm Joy.
I'm Anna.
And I'm Crystal.
We're back with our Conversations with Oscar series, where we are discussing all of the Best Picture nominees of the current 2024 season. Today, we're talking about Oppenheimer, which is the story of American scientist J. Robert Oppenheimer and his role in the development of the atomic bomb. It was nominated for 13 Oscars, including Best Pictures. It was nominated for Lead Actor, Cillian Murphy, Supporting Actor, Robert Downey Jr., Supporting Actress, Emily Blunt, Director, Christopher Nolan, Cinematography, Hoyt von Hoytema, Adapted Screenplay, Christopher Nolan, Original Score, Ludwig Göransson, Makeup and Hairstyling, Louisa Bell Abel, Costume Design, Ellen Mjornik, Editing, Jennifer Lame, Sound, Willie D. Burton, Richard King, Gary A. Rizzo, Kevin O'Connell, and Production Design, Ruth DeJong, and Claire Kaufman. This is Oppenheimer.
Thank you.
right, kiddos. What did we think?
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of knew it would be good because Christopher Nolan is great. I don't know that I like him personally, but I enjoy his work. I tend to always enjoy his work. He's like, you know how we were talking about Bradley Cooper was like trying really hard. He was giving like theater kid energy. Mm-hmm. Christopher Nolan has the same attributes, but like he goes about it a different way because he wants an Oscar just as bad. You know, he's been wanting one for a while, but no, yeah, I thought it was, I don't want to call him a great writer because he can't write women characters. And to me, you're not a great writer if you can't write a woman correctly.
Sure.
And it's not just this movie that the women are underwritten. It's pretty much everything he's done. So that's why I'm like, buddy, you're so good. Like, you have a great, you got a good brain in there, but like, just, like his wife is his producer. Why doesn't she be like, hey, buddy, fix this? But overall, I thought it was really good. But what really sells it to me the most is the score.
Yeah,
I was in love from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
I love Ludwig Göransson so much. I think he's so talented. And he's so smart with what he does. And I've listened to the score so much more than I've only seen the movie twice, but. Yeah, I mean, I overall, I think it was good.
I agree. I really enjoyed this. Turns out when I saw it in theaters, I didn't sleep for as long as I thought I did. I slept for maybe like a minute or two. It was fine. I think this is an epic. And it was done really well. And I think from top to bottom, you have great acting, mostly great writing, some great directing and editing. And like the entire package is as a whole is really great, which is not always the case. Like we talked about with Killers, like the script was where we had issues. And this as a whole is much better done, in my opinion. Yeah, I minus some, I think, lagging in the middle there. I think the pacing kind of loses me a bit. But other than that, great movie.
I think it's funny that you say that about falling asleep because I don't remember falling asleep at all when I saw it in the theater. When I rewatched it, I rented it a couple days ago. I was like, I don't remember this part at all. Did I fall asleep? I guess, like, right before they do the test, I was like, I don't remember any of these conversations. I don't remember that person. What? So I guess I must have dozed off and not realized it. But when I saw the theater, it was packed, full of people. And I went, like, 10:30 in the morning. That was crazy. But, yeah.
I think that's one of the really great things about watching this movie in a theater. I think most of Christopher Nolan's stuff should be seen in a theater, but I also saw it in a theater, and I also saw it like I think it was like 1 o'clock or something because it was the only IMAX showing. But let me tell you that watching things in IMAX, because that's the first thing I've ever seen in IMAX, I will pay the extra money to go see more things in IMAX because holy shit, the way I felt like I was being like the music was all around me, it was like everything everywhere, and like the obviously the image is really huge and it's so crisp, and for cinematography like this and for such a good score like this, it elevated it even more because I rewatched it here at home and it was still great, but I was like, man, just being like inundated and like encapsulated in all of that was just like it made the movie. This is one of those movies that you do. It's so worth it seeing in the theater because it's meant to be seen that way. You know,
yeah.
I don't mind if I like rewatch it in my house here or on my phone or whatever, even though he says that's not how to do it. But the proper viewing is appropriate for this film.
I agree. I think visually watching it on the big screen was worth it. But I definitely picked up on a lot more this time around. I found myself noticing things. And I guess that's the benefit of a second watch is you're able to, like, focus in on certain parts more because you're not taking in everything. So I did enjoy this go around a lot. Also, it helped that I could pause it to go pee. You know, it's the little things.
The little things that matter.
Yeah.
I loved all the different actors in this movie. It was basically like, oh my God, it's that guy, the movie. I thought that was great.
That's true.
There was many just popping up out of nowhere. Like the way I screamed when Josh Hartnett popped up.
Oh my God. And he looks so good.
Listen.
I'm here for the renaissance of Josh Hartnett.
Right? Yeah. Like he of women of a certain age, he was like the teen-esque guy. Like he was around everywhere. And then he just kind of dipped, I guess. He looks great. He has an age today. With those
highlights.
Wow. Oh my God. He was looking I didn't realize he was like 6'4". Whoa. Love that. So, yeah, I'm here for Josh Hartnett being in more things, for sure.
It was definitely the who's who of white men.
True. Not one person of color. And, like, There was one. There was one? Who?
I think he was part of the... It was in the future scenes. Oh, I think when Oppenheimer's doing his... It was after the bombing or whatever, but he was just kind of, like... There's three people walking. Oppenheimer's right. In the middle. Yeah. He was in the back.
Wasn't a prominent character. He was a background character.
No. I think he may have had a line.
Right.
But yeah. I was like, oh, color! I remember that.
So that's normally, like, this is normally the game I play in our Oscar Rewind series. I wait how many minutes into the movie there's a person of color with a substantial, like, line or, like, character. But I already knew that because I remember when... They were announcing all the actors that were going to be in this. It was just like page after page after page of every white person in Hollywood, basically.
Well, and it was.
And I was like, that doesn't make sense. But watching the movie now, it, you know, whatever.
It really has been Barbenheimer from the beginning, because as they were announcing who's going to be in Oppenheimer, yeah. They were announcing all of the people who were going to be in Barbie. And it was such a colorful list of people. And we're all like, there's something happening here, and then they announce they're gonna premiere on the same day, and it's like, this was fated.
Yeah,
this was in the stars that, like, Barbenheimer would be an event.
Another thing that I kind of have, again, I enjoy Christopher Nolan's movies, but him as a person, I'm a little wary because, again, can't write women. He doesn't know a person of color, like, personally, I guess. Only just in theory, maybe.
Only David Washington and Tenet.
That's the only one he knows.
One. Just one.
Yeah. And probably thought it was Denzel. And he was like, oh, fine. You'll work. but I think another thing, too, like, I think I talked about this when we talked about Barbie. It's like, when Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie, Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah.
There's that whole, like, back and forth of, like, oh, going to the movies. It's you know, back at the movie, it's like, it's fun. And so they took pictures of the tickets of each other's movies and even of Oppenheimer, and nothing from Christopher Nolan. Like, come on, buddy, play the game. Like, it's, I don't know. He just seems kind of, and I think I notice it more this Oscar campaign. Like, he's just like nose in the air. Like, I don't know. Also, I feel like film bros like him a lot. And I'm always like, oh, I don't like film bros. Cause like, they're awful. But I do like him, though. I like his work, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
I liked Tenet, even though it kind of broke my brain a little bit. I did like it. I love Inception. And Interstellar. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Or, the as Prestige. I like to say, Interception.
The Prestige is so good. It's underrated. If you haven't seen it, please watch it.
And then, of course, the Batman trilogy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like those movies, but I don't at the same time. So I feel like Christian Bale's
Batman voice is very ridiculous.
It just feels very like. Also, it's a comic movie, so maybe it's supposed to be. I don't know. Don't ask me. Another person I was happy to see was Alden Ehrenreich.
Me too.
So happy to see him.
I'm always happy to see him.
I know.
And he did so well.
Right?
Yeah. He was toe-to-toe with RDJ the whole time.
Yes.
And there was never, like, a talent imbalance. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, did y'all notice the truth that RDJ slips at the very beginning of the movie? Like, the beginning of his trial, he essentially says the third act reveal. I didn't write down the details, and now it's going to bug me. But he was like, oh, yeah, I set up to ruin Oppenheimer, kind of like as a joke.
Oh, like jokingly, yes, that he told that. And I was like, he told that to
foreshadowing. That I did not catch the first time.
Yeah. I didn't expect it to be so catty. Like, oh, the girls are fighting. Like, he is mad. Okay. Yeah.
He was embarrassed once in front of the Supreme Court, and he can never live it down.
Men.
Ugh, God. They're just as bad.
I'm embarrassed every day. You don't see me going to the Supreme Court.
Men need to learn to be, like, just men need to learn. Just men need to learn. That's about it, basically.
What always cracks me up is that men are so quick with the, well, women are so emotional. I'm like, bitch, look what you just did because you got your feelings hurt.
Exactly.
Oh, you poor baby. The big bunny hurt your feelings. So now you've got to ruin his entire career.
Also, when he's like,
get the fuck over yourself.
He's like, what did he tell Einstein? He talked about me. I was like, it's not even about you, bruh. Like,
it's literally not. They're literally scientists.
He's talking about me. I just know it. He said something to him. That's why he doesn't look at me.
Einstein wouldn't look at me.
What? What is this? 90210? I can't. What is happening here?
Ridiculous.
No, I can't. That is... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, at first, I didn't quite understand the whole black and white of RDJ scenes. I was like, this feels so weird, and it didn't make sense to me. And then this time around, RDJ has a line. He says, power stays in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I feel like that's why it's in black and white, because this is where the power is. This is where the power is happening. And I appreciated the black and white a lot more this time around because of it.
Yeah. And I think comparatively, like we talked about the last episode with the Maestro, where it was just used, like, so, like, both of these could be very obvious, like, ooh, in the shadows, it's dark, it's black and white, whatever. But it's the execution of it, and, like, it the way, the purpose in which it's used. I feel like in this, it was edited well into the story, versus where Maestro was just, like, flash, and then, like, take it off, and it's just, this is more... Like, you can see that Christopher Nolan, his direction was much more clear in this, much more cohesive than the use of the black and white Maestro.
Also, the unexpected way in which it was used, showing the future and not to represent the past.
Yes.
Subverting that, I think, was also a really smart move, because if all of the Los Alamos had been in black and white, I would have been rolling my eyes.
Right.
But the fact that it was just RDJ stuff with the hearing, chef's kiss. I loved it.
You know, I really liked, speaking of Robert Downey Jr., and we'll get to that in a second, I think one of the other standouts, other than we just talked about Alden, what's his last name? Help. Eric Wright?
Hold on. I have
the
right
name
here. Aaron Wright.
Aaron Wright. Okay, him. The character of Robbie, which I forgot his name, but the guy from 10 Things I Hate About You.
David Krumholtz.
I thought David Krumholtz was so
I love
good
him.
In
He's
this.
Great. I love how he was like always making sure Oppie ate. That's a real friend right there. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, he was such a good, like, support system for him. And even then, like, I think that the writing did him so well, and that he had his own, like, character arc throughout, and he was well written, and, like, just his scenes were very, the chemistry that he had with Cillian Murphy felt like so natural, and so, like, you definitely see that in, like, certain, like, friendship pairings where you have one that's a little bit more, like, warm and comforting and looking out for the other one, and the other one's like cold and like rational, or just more like straightforward.
You believe their friendship.
Yes, it felt, their chemistry was so so good. And I think that's a testament to both of them. But I really wish more people were talking about David Cromwell's, because I was like, he was one of the, of all the supporting characters, he was like one of the standouts for me, because there was a lot to choose from.
He's definitely one that I was like, I want more of him. He's a nice presence to have around.
Yeah.
And also, I think it was actually, now that I think about it, kind of smart to have all these smaller parts played by well-known actors. Mm-hmm. Because at least for me, it helped me keep track of who everyone was.
Yes. Yeah.
Because imagine, like, if it was just some Joe Schmo I wouldn't know, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it was the guy with the hair, with the with the bow. I don't know. Whatever. So I think it was smart to cast well-known people.
Yeah.
Look, I am not typically one to notice the gay yearning.
Oh, no.
Here we go. Let's go.
But this second time around, and it's not even that I noticed it, but I was like, I could totally see where people would see it and write fan fiction between Lawrence and Oppenheimer.
Oh, my God.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
I think you're wrong, but whatever.
I did feel like there was some tension there. I did. I wasn't going to be the first to say it, because then y'all would be like, but thank you, Anna, for bringing it up. So just Crystal would be like,
I'm not saying it was like obvious or super present, but there was just a moment or two where I was like, I could see people latching onto this and making it a thing. I'm not making it a thing. I can see where it could be.
Yeah. And you know what? Christopher Nolan's like notorious for having like that kind of like weird like tension chemistry between actors, because like Inception, the way that happened, and I can't remember the other one, but yes, no, I totally Dunkirk, I think, was one.
Dunkirk,
some people were shipping people on Dunkirk. I can't remember who.
People ship everything on everyone everywhere.
Yeah,
that's easy, but to it was... do with boys in the military.
Well, yeah, there you go.
It happens. I remember walking out of the film, where I fell asleep the first time was it's not even really a sex scene. It's the scene where Florence Pugh and Cillian Murphy are naked in the chairs talking. Mm-hmm. And he's telling her, like, I can't come back. I woke up at the end of that scene where he's telling her, like, I'm not coming back. But really all I missed was like maybe a couple of minutes before that. But so when I woke up, I thought there was another sex scene. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of sex in the unnecessary sex in this. But this time around, and the one that bothered me so much the first time was Florence Pugh appearing naked in the hearing. I felt like that was really weird and out of place, but it made so much more sense to me this time around of like, he's being very vulnerable and he's being laid bare in front of these people and he's really letting them have everything. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm an open book. Everything. I'm in front of my wife. I am talking about this. And her, you know, imagining what he's talking about, like that whole scene just made a lot more sense to me and it didn't feel weird or gratuitous anymore. Them being naked in the chairs was probably unnecessary, but other than that, I didn't feel that way second time around.
Yeah, I noticed how it was like, because when I first watched, I was like, okay, like I don't have a problem with sex scenes typically, but like why? And then when she showed up again, like, you know, like you said, to show his vulnerability, I was like, oh, okay, there you go. But then when I watched it the second time, I was like, I love Florence Pugh, one of my favorite actresses, but I don't know that she was ultimately really necessary, because maybe she was, now that I think about it, because when she later commits suicide and Emily Blunt is like, you don't get to commit a sin and then make us all like feel bad for you or whatever. And that's foreshadowing to when, you know, the whole thing that is the bomb. So I'm like, okay, I guess so, maybe like less of that. I don't know. I feel like it could have been better executed, but I'm not sure how to do that. but I think I saw its purpose much more the second time around. The first time around, I was like, well, if they're just talking naked, like, again, she's fully naked and he's not. There's a whole conversation of like,
female nudity and male nudity and how it's like almost much always on the woman than it is on the man. And Florence Pugh has said that she's no problem with nudity, and that's great. I'm happy that she was comfortable with it, but I think an overall issue is the fact that it's always up to the woman to present that than it is the man.
Yeah.
But again, I would not expect anything less from a movie where he can't really write women anyway. They're super thin. So there you go.
I originally thought he went full frontal in this, but I was trying to avoid things on Twitter for other movies, and they were definitely talking about Saltburn, the little Irishman being full frontal on screen. I thought they were talking about Killian. It was definitely Barry Keoghan. So when I woke up, and I was like, I missed his full frontal, which is fine. But I didn't, so.
That's okay. You're fine. You didn't miss anything.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of very thinly fleshed out women, Emily Blunt's character, Kitty, to me, she felt very, like, the trope of the, like, angry housewife or the, like, bitter housewife. And she didn't really have much more to her. And I feel like it could have been there had they pushed more on, like, her really pushing him to, had they developed more, her really pushing him to be, like, well, why aren't you fighting back? Why aren't you defending yourself? Why aren't you defending us and our family? I feel like there was something there, but they didn't really flesh it out. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time she just came off as the, like, the jaded housewife, blah, 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 whatever. Like, his, like, romancing her, taking her away to New Mexico and, like, them being on horseback or whatever. And it just fell into, like, a really, like, a very basic, you know, wife in a prestigious movie, wife of a scientist, wife of a whatever. There wasn't really much more to it than that, where I think that there could have been.
Wife of a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, she could have been the voice of for the audience, like, mm-hmm. us as the audience asking questions. Like, Oppie, why are you doing this? She could have been the voice for us asking him these questions. That would have been, again, if you can't call yourself a good writer if you can't write women. Sorry, you just can't. And it seems like such a simple character thing to give to this person narratively to make the project move forward. I mean, yeah, she just was like a wife and a drunk and a terrible mother, apparently. Like, why? Like, maybe that was real. I don't know. But like, why? Why do that? Like, mm-hmm. what purpose does that serve?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say terrible mother. Only because I feel like she was suffering from some severe postpartum. And that just wasn't a thing that was recognized at the time or talked about. So I definitely felt bad for her that, you know, she was going through this thing. And Oppenheimer is not a present husband and or father. Like, he literally comes home and is like, oh, my wife is sad. Let me take my baby away so that she can be better. Feels a bit weird. But I will say, I don't agree. I mean, I agree that she didn't have enough character, enough substance. But I do love that moment at the end where she refuses to shake his hand. And I think it's also accompanied by that awesome score that, and she's just looking at him like, I'm not going to shake your hand. I was like, go, girl.
She got nominated for that in her speech. That's literally it.
Wait, which speech?
She, her, not her speech, but her, when she's talking to the
her testimony.
The courtroom testimony, scene? There you go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, courtroom scene. That's not really a courtroom, but whatever. Like, and she's a much better actress than that, so I feel like that's insulting. Like, Emily Blunt is not a bad actress. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. And considering how stacked this year has been, could be, should have been, it just feels like a waste of space. She took it away from somebody else.
Which sucks because she's a great actress. And
yeah, exactly.
Sliver she was given, she did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Again, my problems with films are almost never the actor. It's the writing and the directing.
There was one moment in the script where I was like, oh, this is straight cheese. And it was when it hit Oppenheimer, his brother, and Lawrence are camping. And he's like, what is this place? This is Los Alamos. And then it, like, faded into the next scene. I was like, okay.
Have you ever gone stargazing?
No, but I want to so bad.
It's great. It's really great.
Oh, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, we should do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, right now.
Okay, let's go.
Well, Crystal, you and I tried that one time. What? And then when I got that telescope.
Oh, my God. I forgot all of that.
We couldn't get it to work, so we went to a playground next door and chased off some children so we could have it. And then I fell flat on my fucking face.
It was hilarious.
Why is it that every story that we tell always ends with one of us falling?
And she was like, don't record me, don't record me, don't record me.
Did you record her?
No, I didn't.
Damn it.
She told me not to.
You're so nice.
And you know what? We remember that day just fine without the recording.
I mean, I had to be reminded just now, but yes, you're right.
I mean, I don't remember and I wasn't there. What about
you? Because you weren't there. You, Joy.
That was before. Whatever. That was before you left your laundry on our couch and we found your bra and underwear there after you left. Like, what is it? Okay. We're on a family trip and we were driving into, where are we going? I think it was this past one we went to New Mexico. And on the way back we stayed at like this, it's like a hotel, but it's like a big plot of land. And then there's like little houses. They're like the room, right? And so you drive up and next to their room. And then we got there really late because we had been driving for so long. But the guy who owns the place was like, hey, come look at the stars with us if you want to. So we went outside and it's pitch black. So you can see everything. Oh my God, it was beautiful. And so they had like picnic tables. So he's like, yeah, you can look up there and like you can lay down and look at it and stuff. And like seeing the stars up, you know, here at the house in the city is one thing, but seeing it in the pitch black, like there's no way I could take a photo and it would look anything. That I was like, I'm so thankful that I can see this, like the gift of sight. Like, oh my God. So I want to do it again because it was so great.
Where was that, in Arizona?
No, it was small town, Texas. We're on our way back from there. And we stayed at this little hotel.
That's so cute.
At my last apartment, every night when I took my dog out, I would look up and I would find this little set of stars that I'd claimed. I was like, those are mine. And I would find the bigger stars next to them and I'd go over and be like, oh, there's my stars. Here in my current place, they're not always easy to find. There's a lot more light here.
That's adorable.
That's so cute. That's just another thing. That's adorable.
When I leave my sister's house, because she lives a little further out from the city, there's a lot more stars. So when I leave her house, I'm always like, oh, there you are.
That's cute.
That's so cute.
Oh, my God. Like, when we went to when we were at the beach and then the moon and the stars were, like, humongous. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That moon. Know. That red moon.
Jesus. Look. I did.
That was a good time. That was it. That was good. Mm-hmm. That was good. And especially at night, it's just so nice. It's just so peaceful. It's just like, wow. The universe. Amazing. Amazing.
So I think that Cillian Murphy convincingly looks all these different ages just by changing his hair. Like, that's pretty good. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. You're a college student. Oh, I get it. You're an older man. Okay, I feel it. All right. Like, all he changed was his hair, and I bought it. So I was like, props to the hair department. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the hands always tell the truth.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't looking at his hands,
He was doing that thing with the apple, and I was like, oh, baby. Those are not college boy hands.
Also, like, who's gonna poison him? Like, what the?
He was a little bit. He was losing it a little bit. He was homesick. He was you know, not doing well in school, no. I guess. But yikes.
He regretted it and he went back to try and fix it.
Yeah, but they still didn't. I've had intrusive thoughts before, but never like acted on them. Not to that regard or that far either. Like,
have you ever had access to sodium chloride?
I cannot confirm nor deny these allegations. I cannot answer that question.
This is published, so
I plead the fifth. Thank you.
Cannot confirm nor deny. I don't have a shot list for this necessarily, but I just really, really enjoy all the close-up shots of the chemical reactions. And then someone was saying visions of a hidden universe, and I was like, yes, that's what it looks like. And the way they were edited into everything else, I feel like in lesser hands, they could have been like really chaotic and just really like chop, 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 chop. Yeah. But I feel like it was like very well edited into this to like build the tension and build the anxiety. And you have so many different, like, they almost turn into like, it's so close up that it almost looks like abstract paintings because you just see like,
oh,
it's just like patterns. So like the smoke clouds and it's just like clouds, 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 clouds. And it just looks like a pattern versus like you can tell what it is. Or like when they're saying, oh, we can do this with the shooting the atoms or whatever, because I don't know scientific words. And it's like, yeah, we're shooting the atoms at it. And it has like a close up of like the atoms like going against each other. And it was just like, it almost looks like these really intense like patterns or like pieces of like abstract art, because it's not, it's so close up that you can't really tell what's what, but it's still so like engaging because it's like moving either really fast or really slowly. What he did with that, I just love it. I just really, really visually enjoyed that.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Tree of Life. They were going into the universe, and that one was a little more abstract and about it. But I think also the fact that they were going into all of that was also, I guess, to mimic the idea that Oppenheimer was so close to what he was doing that he didn't realize till it was too late, like, oh, this is a bomb, mm-hmm. and this is gonna, like, kill people. And he's like, oh, shit, like, this is bad. So I guess I didn't correlate the two until just now, so I think that's really smart. Also, that whole thing is, like, really muddy, because, like, when he's trying to recruit the scientists, and that one of them says, like, well, because Cillian Murphy says, well, they need us, and he's like, until they don't. And he's mm-hmm. right. They didn't. They
yeah.
used him and threw him to the side, and that's pretty common for a lot of people who help the country. anyways, but yeah, because you think like, oh, how can you feel this way if you actually made a bomb? But he's like, well, we have to, because then it's gonna be put into the hands who don't know how to do it, and it's gonna be worse. So we're the best people for this job, so we almost have to be a part of it, or else it's gonna be way worse. But at the same time, like, we don't want to be a part of it, but this is literally what I do, you know, I'm a scientist. So like, I thought that conundrum was interesting.
But also the conundrum of, if we don't, they will, like,
yeah,
the Germans yeah. will.
That's what I mean. Like, they have to. They don't have a choice.
Yeah. The idea that, you know, they could have refused and been like, I think a lot about that moment, and Oppenheimer obviously did too, of when he took the equation to
Einstein.
Einstein could have been like, you're right. It's not going to work. He could have put an end to it if he would have said these calculations are correct, this will destroy the world. And yeah, they could have shared that information with the Nazis and been like, look, if you pursue this, it's gonna kill you too. But the chances of them having somebody to check it and be like, oh no, they're wrong, and to make it themselves, like, that slim chance is it's everything. It's literally everything. And that's why they were like, we have to do it. Because if we don't, they will.
You know, and part of me is glad that they showed the parts where they're like, you know, the whole team is like sitting in a conference room wrestling over like the moral dilemma of like, should we continue? Should we cease? Can we justify this? And like, someone said, how do we justify using this weapon on human beings? Because it's like a real answer. Like to them, their Oppenheimer was so much about like theory, and he put other people on like the practical side of it. So like in his head, he's just like calculations and numbers and equations and like, what does the science do? But that's not how it works. Like you have real life consequences to everything. And of course he doesn't get it into his head until it's too late. And like, it just, it's a very interesting moral dilemma there, because really, no, you can't really justify doing this to other human beings, regardless of whatever. But I do find it interesting that in the movie, they were like, okay, if we're using it on the Germans, then like, no problem. But then when he was like, oh no, we're going to use it on the Japanese instead, then he was like, oh, wait a second. Like, we thought we were doing this against the Germans, and now the Germans have basically surrendered, and now we have this other quote unquote enemy that we're going to use it on. So then they really started to question, like, because I don't know if in their head, I don't know if what he was thinking was like, okay, maybe the Japanese people are more humane than like the Nazis. So like his thinking turned a little bit.
Do you think that, because this is something I read in regards to the movie, do you think that they should have shown the Japanese victims?
I don't think so, only because one, this isn't being done from the perspective of the Japanese.
Do you think there should have been a perspective from them at all?
Not from Christopher Nolan's point of view, no. Because, I mean, we can say the same thing about Killers of the Flower Moon. Should it have been done by Martin Scorsese? Probably not. Should have been done by the Osage people? Probably yes. But I've actually, like, the first time that it really hit me, like, you know, you read it in history, you read it in school or whatever, but the first time that it really hit me, like, oh, what is this and what did it do to people? There's a film, and I need to look it up, but there's a Japanese animated film that shows, like, the dropping of the bomb in Hiroshima and, like, the after effects of what happened. And even though it's animated, it's still very, like, it's very visceral, and it's very, like, to my understanding of people that live through it, very real. I'll have to find the film. But a lot of people, I read that a lot of people watched that and were like, no, there's no way, there's no way. But there's stories about what happened from the perspective of the Japanese already done. And I know that he's doing this from the perspective of Oppenheimer himself. But I know that there's people better suited to tell that story that have already done it.
Yeah, I think this is the story of Oppenheimer, not necessarily the story of the bombing. So okay. I think that's a big delineation. But also we get to see Oppenheimer's reaction to seeing the...
And I think that was more effective.
I do too. Watching them all have this visceral reaction to knowing what happened and how seeing the evidence, I think, was plenty. But I also loved how they showed his trauma and how he was haunted by it throughout the rest of the film. I loved that we could hear that the stomping and the screaming of the crowd.
Ooh, yeah.
And all of his like post.
Yeah.
Bomb scenes. We didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
We didn't even know what that was until we got to it towards the end of the film. And like the shaking of the background and like that white noise kind of sound. I thought all of that was so well done and such a great through line throughout the film, because we're jumping time wise and we can always tell, like, when we hear that stomping, we know he's getting overwhelmed and he's getting like, he's thinking, I deserve this. I deserve this. I deserve this. I thought that was really great and really beautifully done.
Yeah, the editing on that was really good. Another perspective, and I guess in the line of what Joy was saying, that it's not his story to tell, but they don't ever mention how it affected people in New Mexico, how that test affected people in New Mexico as well. There's a tweet that I forgot her name. I'll link it in the show notes, where she talks about how her grandmother suffered from, and everyone in her community suffered from, like, cancer because of the effects of this bomb, and how, like, no one really did anything about it because it wasn't supposed to be known what was happening. So I think it's, if anything, I hope that this, because it's very Hollywood, this movie, but I hope people take the time to look into other parts of it that weren't just Oppenheimer. Because, yeah, it affected more than just him and, you know, the whole world, really. But I think it's ultimately a well-done movie, despite all the faults that I have with it.
Speaking of the Trinity test, that whole sequence, I think, the pacing, the intensity, the music, the silence, her use of silence and breath, I think that whole sequence is Oscar worthy in itself. If it was just that, you know, I'd be like, yeah, nominate it for everything.
Because that was apparently the end of my nap in the theater that I didn't realize happened. When it happened, I was like, oh my God, I'm like, this is so exciting. Like, I'm getting all jolted because, you know, the chest and then silence. I was like, oh, like the gasp in the theater. It was an experience. Yeah.
It was palpable.
Yeah.
I remember when I was watching it, like, the whole time leading up to that, I was, like, holding Benjamin's hand and, like, moving forward in the seat, and I was like, oh, my God, it's happening.
And then I know you were like...
Yeah, that's basically what I was doing. And as soon as it happens and it just goes quiet, like, you could hear a pin drop in the movie theater. Yeah. It was like everybody's breath was sucked out of their body. Like, we were there. It was incredible. It's like, this is such a great movie going experience because it's an experience. And, like, I feel bad for, like, the same with Interstellar. I feel bad for people who didn't see that in the movie theater because that shit blows your fucking mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's incredibly well-crafted scene. Or scenes.
Yeah, and then we get that slight lull afterwards, and then that third act picks up, and it's just...
Yeah.
I feel like we're just rolling downhill until the end of the film. And I love the pacing of the third act of this film. And seeing it all kind of come together of why we're seeing RDJ's story at all, and... And third act of this movie really did it for me.
Yeah, and you know what? I was like, I'm notorious for falling asleep in the movie theater. But, like, I saw this at, like, 10:30 at night. So by the time this ended, it was, like, almost 1. I did not fall asleep through any of it, which is how I know it was well-paced and it was good. Because I did not nap, not close my eyes, not falling asleep. Wow. And that's because I had worked the whole day and then went to see a movie at 10:30. I even told Benjamin, I was like, oh my God, I hope, just watch the movie and, like, if I fall asleep, just catch me up on whatever's happening. Not once.
Wow, not you staying awake and me and Anna falling asleep.
I know, I'm so shocked. Like, I was riveted. And, like, I was very, I don't know what's the word. I guess cautious about, like, going to watch this movie because I know, like, content-wise, I'm like, ah, like, I don't know. It's tricky. It's like with one of the movies that we'll talk about later. I wasn't super excited to watch it. But having watched it, I was like, fuck. It really turned me around. It got me. It got me on the execution and the craftsmanship and... even the writing, like there's some of the quotes in there that I'm like, okay, it could be a little cheesy, but I do like it. Like visions of the hidden universe. The important thing isn't that you can read the music, but that you can hear the music, especially paired with a score like this. I think that was a little on the nose, but still great.
Yes. Can you hear the music?
I know. That's how I feel after hearing it. That's also how I feel like when I show my friends music that I like, I'm like, can you hear that music? Like, love it as much as I do. I know they won't, but, like, I wish you would. What else? Oh, the fucking the most, like, to me, the most, like, skin crawling disgusting scene in the whole movie is when they're deciding what cities to use it on. I was like, this is fucking gross. And the fact that that man was like, oh, not this one, because that's where I honeymoon with my wife. Fuck you, bitch. I hope blank, 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 blank. But they were like, once to show its power, twice to show we can keep doing it until they surrender. You're disgusting. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Blank, 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 blank.
That was real nauseating, for sure.
I was like, that was like sickening. That was sickening. I was like, this is what the world is. And we can't say that too much has changed. It's just disgusting men meeting in rooms with power, sitting around, deciding who gets to live or die. This shit is disgusting. It's disgusting.
I mean, also, like, yeah, it is disgusting, but the same, not that I'm, like, justifying making a bomb or anything, but, like,
fine.
I mean, I don't know. It's easy for me to say, like, how dare you on this side of it. But I'm not over there in that room making those huge decisions. Like, I don't know what I would do. I don't want to be over there. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, I'm not justifying terrible acts or terrible white men choosing which city to bomb, because that's awful. But we can't control other countries. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm stepping into some mess.
Well, I'll step in with mess. You. Watching this movie and others of the season, you know, with the backdrop of our current political landscape in the world, it's very heavy. It adds an extra layer to it. And to know that these were made before what's going on was going on.
Yeah.
So that wasn't in the forefront of the filmmaker's mind, but it just adds such a potent layer to watching these films.
I just can't imagine being in a room like that and making those big of decisions. Like, I can't even decide what I'm going to eat for dinner half the time. You mean people are, like, in rooms making decisions, like, who should I bomb today? Like, that's nuts to me.
But you know what? There are those... that's the scary thing, is that there are those people sitting in those rooms, and, like, very... My thing is how, like, easily and how, like, nonchalant they're doing it. They're just like, oh yeah, just not this one because I honeymooned then.
Because it's just like any job, it becomes mundane, it becomes the same, which is terrible.
But I feel like right. But I feel like also because they have that, like, subconscious sense of security that, like, okay, even though let's say they'll try to bomb the US, like, it won't get me, it won't affect me, because I'm in a high place of power, so it's not going to get me. And I think that correlates very well to, again, the current political landscape. Plenty of people are just saying, oh, let's do this, this, and that, and let's, you know, genocide, and let's blah blah blah, because it's not affecting you. You're not even anywhere close to that, so, like, you don't give a shit because it's not in front of you. It's not in your house. It's not your people. It's not your whatever. But, like, it's affecting somebody, which I think a good point that, like, you know, Albert Einstein regretted saying, like, going to the president and be like, we need to make a bomb. Okay, so he regrets that. He deals with his consequences later in life. Yeah. His friend Robbie was like, I mean, can we really justify committing genocide for like an entire, like,
they'll find a reason.
Twice? Two places in one country?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Because no matter what, it's the people, everyday people that suffer.
Of course.
It's never the ones that should suffer.
I believe in karma. I believe one day people will get what's coming to them. I'm holding on to hope that that's what it is. And blankety blank, 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 blank. That's it.
Yeah, and I think believing in that helps me deal with it. Because if I believe in my head that they'll get their just desserts later on, then okay, I can deal with this a little bit easier. Whether they do or not, I guess not, it's out of my control. But if I, in my head, believe that they would, then it's easier to digest.
I was going to save this poem for... Hold on. That's second thought. First thought was, sorry, I've been holding on to it for a minute. It reminds me a lot, and I think it's the episode we watched for the podcast of, like, season one, first few episodes of The West Wing, like, what is the value of a proportional response? Japan attacked us, so what is the proportional response? It was not dropping the an atomic bomb on them. But mm-hmm. it just reminds me of that conversation that President Bartlet has of, like, they bombed us, so now what is the appropriate attack for us to make? We can't attack, we have to attack a place that, you know, we have to warn them and give them time to clear it or whatever. And, like, there's all of this that goes into making a proportional response.
Also, I love that you always bring that up every time.
The West Wing.
Girl, that specific episode, you always bring it up.
But I was going to save this for the Zone of Interest episode, but we were just talking about it, and I feel like it fits better here. After I watched the movie last night, I was introduced to this poem. It's called We Lived Happily During the War by Ilya Kaminsky. It's real short. I'm going to read it, if that's okay. Or would you rather just link it?
No, you can read it. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read it. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed, around my bed. America was falling. Invisible house by invisible house by invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In the 6 months of a disastrous reign in the house of money, in the street of money, in the city of money, in the country of money, our great country of money, we, forgive us, lived happily during the war. No, remind me, yeah, it's literally what we were just talking about, is we're sitting happily in our beds because it's not happening here, and it's not something that we can, especially our generation, you know. In World War II, I guess we were attacked as well.
I see where your brain is going. Yeah,
but, like, it's so far from us that it doesn't register for us the way it does for others in the world.
You know, and I think that I've said it before, but I think that's one of the benefits of, one of the only positive things to have come out of social media, is that, like, we're more interconnected than we ever have been. And there's more, like, there's more knowledge of other cultures and other countries and everything else. So it's less, unless you purposely hide away from it, it's harder to hide away from things that are going on worldwide. And same thing about history, like, you know, okay, now we know about Oppenheimer, whatever. Killers of the Flower Moon told us about the Osage murders. Now there's a little bits and pieces that we can go find for ourselves. And, you know, the same thing, like, the people who were affected negatively by the blast in New Mexico, like, we don't know their story, but because of social media, we know a little bit of the history, and we can, you know, search more into that. So, again, one of the only positive things to have come out of social media is that, being connected, we can share knowledge and resources and kind of help educate each other in trying to make the future hopefully a better place.
Yeah, I agree.
Completely unrelated from that, I did think that Rami Malek was better in his few scenes in here than the entirety of Bohemian Rhapsody.
I don't know, I missed the teeth.
Oh my god. Sure.
What is a best actor's performance without a ridiculous prosthetic?
Oof. Well, Killian Murphy didn't have a prosthetic, did he?
No, but I was just talking about Bradley Cooper.
About the ridiculous ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, ridiculous for sure.
For sure.
So I know, like, this is technically a biopic. It's about someone real, but it doesn't feel biopic-y, and I think I like that.
Yes. Yeah.
It's much more sophisticated than, say, I don't know, Maestro.
And I think it's because it's not, I mean, it is solely on Oppenheimer, but the introduction of Strauss and having that whole part of the film, I think, broke it up nicely to where it wasn't all like, here's what Oppenheimer did next, and this is what happened after that, and next he did this, but not before he did that.
I think what helps with biopics, at least to me, I think, is that when they don't focus on their from birth to death, it's more when they focus on a singular event. Like, I think I've talked about this before, but 42, the story of Jackie Robinson, is Chadwick Boseman, and it's about his first major league game. That's all it's about. You learn about him through the events that add up to that game. And it's so well done because you're learning about him and his family and his way of life and what it was like, and the pressure and how scared he was, but also excited. But through the single event, I think that's a better way to go about biopics than he was born and then he died.
It's too much. Happened in the middle.
It's too much.
But not before he did that.
Yeah, it doesn't follow any of the, like, traditional beats of a biopic, so we'll give it a pass because it was done well. I just have this one note. The reverb on the music during the testing, the reverb on it, I was like, oh, because even in my TV here at home, I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to turn. I put the volume up way too loud. I'm sure my neighbors were annoyed, but I was like, oh, I can feel it. You feel it in your bones. It's so, yeah. I don't know how to explain music stuff in a sophisticated way, but I just know that I feel it. Like, that's what I feel at concerts. I just, like, feel it. Like, it's so intense.
Well, yeah, can you hear the music? That's what he's at. Can you feel it? I think it's really good, and I guess I'll say it now. The score is really good about using brass instruments. Brass instruments are really good at, like, announcing and are being sharp and quick, and that entire score is so good. Like, the crescendos and decrescendos in that the whole album is like, oh my God. The greenhouse effect of the whole album is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, Joy, your neighbors heard that score and they were like, oh, she's having a religious experience. We'll let her be.
And you know what? It helps. It was Ash Wednesday, so maybe they assume something off of that.
Yeah. Oh, you watched it today.
Yeah. Yeah, I rewatched it today.
Happy Lenten season, y'all.
I'm not giving up anything. I'm great.
I don't participate, but cool for you guys, I guess.
Yeah, I don't participate. I just kept, when I walked out today, I was like on my way to an appointment and I was like, what does that person have on their head? And I was like, oh, that's right. Correct.
Correct.
So I read that this is the first script written entirely in the first person. So all the stage direction is from Oppie's perspective.
Interesting. The first one.
Apparently, I read that several different places.
Feels unnecessary.
I haven't read the script, so I don't know. But I was like, okay, cool.
That was all from his perspective, maybe, but not.
I feel like that feels very accurate to Christopher Nolan. I feel like he would do something like that.
Right.
A little pretentious.
He'd be doing the most.
Yeah, yeah. That seems right.
I have a quick list of every time I saw someone go, oh, that guy, I wrote their name down. So, okay. So I have Alden Ehrenreich, Jason Clark, Kenneth Branagh, David Krumholtz, Josh Hartnett, Matthew Modine, Matt Damon, Dane DeHaan, Jack Quaid, Josh Peck, Michael Ungaretti. I can never say his name. Benny Safdie, Devin Bostick, Rami Malek, Casey Affleck, David Dismalchian, Gary Oldman, and that's it.
Damn. James Darcy, Tony Goldwyn.
Oh, okay, I missed those.
Tony Goldwyn!
Yeah.
Oh, I love
seeing Mr. him President!
Yeah. I know I missed them. I couldn't remember who they were. But I have James to tell you, Darcy. In the theater... Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I loved him. I fell in love with him in Cloud Atlas. That was all I was going to say.
When, in the theater, when that scene... in the office with Casey Affleck, they don't show his face initially, and he started talking, and I literally went, oh my God, why does that name sound familiar, or why does that voice sound familiar, and I got, like, scared almost, and what pants yeah, I was like, the, oh my God, jump scare,
a predator Casey coming Affleck on scene scare.
That is the appropriate reaction to Casey Affleck.
Yeah, just, I don't know, like, was he trying to shoot him scarily, because it worked. I was scared.
Yeah, I think I, well, even if he wasn't, I think that's just him.
I have a confession to make.
Do it. You love him. I got
another confession to make.
God, no.
No.
I'm no fool.
Thank you.
No, my confession is I still don't quite understand the Chevalier incident.
When Chevalier was in the kitchen telling him about... it was like the funds. I think it was mm-hmm. the funds. And he was saying that he could go through communist channels.
Right.
Uh-huh. But like he's not supposed to do that, especially yeah. so close to the project.
Yeah, didn't I know it was like, something communist, treason? But
yeah. Yeah, treasonous. Yeah.
But I didn't understand what was treason.
The whole conversation. Was my
just them having that conversation. Okay.
Yeah, because okay. he's not supposed to, he's already so close to the project that he should not be talking to anybody about any channels of giving any money to anybody. So got that's it. Why they're so like hung up on it later. From my understanding.
Right.
There was a lot of things what happening name. In the movie. That's
what I fucking love the Chevalier. Name Chevalier.
Ugh. Yeah. Good fun name. To say. It's very fun to say.
Yeah. Okay.
Any last notes, I guess.
Before we go into categories.
I think those are all my notes.
Wait, let me see. Let me see.
Oh, I forgot. A naked brother was in it. One of the naked brothers was in it.
Alex
movie.
Wolff.
There you go.
What?
The guy from Hereditary.
He was in the Naked Brothers?
He's uh-huh. one of them, yeah. He's a naked brother.
I have no he was idea. The younger one. He's that's great. I really think he's great. I didn't watch the Naked Brothers. But I definitely kind of knew who they were. And then I learned about them again during my John Green era. Because Nat Wolff was in Paper Towns.
Oh, I know.
The adaptation. And, or where's, he's in one of them. And then the brothers in another one. And then, of course, Alex Wolff is in Hereditary.
I don't. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen enough of them to know them apart. I just know he was a naked brother. So I was like, oh, a naked brother. So I didn't write his name down. I just wrote naked brother.
Amazing.
I wonder why she doesn't like flowers. Oh, I wonder what Florence Pugh's thing was with like, don't buy me flowers or whatever. She said that.
Maybe she was like one of those, I'm not like other girls. I don't like flowers. It feels very character accurate.
Okay, whatever.
I feel like it was more she didn't want him to think like they were in a relationship. You okay. bring flowers to your girlfriend, but I'm not your girlfriend. Hmm. Kind of vibes.
I guess.
Don't get attached to me, but also don't leave me. She was very...
Right.
Okay. Hold on.
Sorry, we've all been there.
Speaking of Florence Pugh... They kind of hinted at maybe she didn't kill herself and that someone yes. murdered her. I want more on that.
Right?
Uh-huh. I need to know.
Well, because they were tailing him and everything.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that they did it. So that he could just be done with that, focus. Get a security clearance yeah. and focus. Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's awful. But yeah. I makes sense.
That tracks with who's doing it.
I appreciate the flashbacks to who their character was because I don't remember. There were several times like, oh yeah, I know him, and they would flashback to the last scene. I was like, thank you, Christopher Nolan, because I forgot who that was. Thank you.
There's so many people to juggle.
He made this for the old people and me. Thank you.
Oh, I have one more note. I don't know if it was a violin or viola. I don't know how to tell those two things apart, but when he's teaching his first seminar. That whatever the strings was that was building up in there, that was mm-hmm. crescendoing in there, that delicious, lovely. Put it in my ears. I love it. So good.
That's all my notes.
The graphics in the beginning of the film when he's in college and he's like imagining all the science or whatever reminded me a lot of Interstellar.
Oh right, yeah.
They just felt very like they belonged in that universe.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it for me. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Best picture. Should it be there?
Oh, yeah.
Show.
I for agree. Sure. A well-made movie. I think a good criteria for an Oscar movie is a movie that I enjoyed but also had problems with. So, yeah. Agree.
You know, we can have nuanced takes. We're adults here. We can we're multifaceted. actor in a leading role for Cillian Murphy. He's up against Bradley Cooper in Maestro, Colman Domingo, Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, and Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction.
I think so. Yes. Because he is the one who holds the movie together for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a strong enough performer to do that. A weaker actor would have made it feel not as strong and cohesive, and I think he's the really good through line for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Actor in a supporting role, I almost said Robert De Niro. Robert Downey Jr. is up against Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, Ryan Gosling in Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Thoughts? I want everyone's thoughts on this.
I say yes. I think he did a great job. I think he balanced, you know, the guy we're getting our information from. There's a term I'm trying to think of, but I can't. The beginning of the film, like, he's our trusted narrator, and then mm-hmm. how quickly it turns. I thought he did well in that.
Sure. I wasn't, like, blown away by him or anything like that. And like I said, I think sure.
You know what? I wasn't so sure about it the first time around. The first time around, I was like, there's other people here, not just him. But the second time around, paying closer attention to the individual performances, I was like, all right, fine, you're great.
I kept thinking, I forgot who posted it, but that video that's like, P, to the T-T-Y, she's petty all the time. That's what I kept thinking about the whole time he was on screen.
But he does it so well.
To the T-T-Y.
We should learn that again.
Also, I feel like if he wins, it'll be a career Oscar, because
yeah,
it just feels career-y to me.
Yeah. But also, I'm like, I have been converted, and I do think he did a good job, and he deserves his nomination.
You didn't like him as an actor before this?
I don't know. Sometimes his like real life personality bleeds into his characters a lot, and that annoys me. With him in particular. But he was really good. Second time watch when I got to focus a little bit more rather than just experiencing a bunch of stuff in my face. I thought he did great.
Yeah, him being there, I'm not mad at it. There's other people I take out, but sure.
Yeah,
we'll I keep think them for now. Sure. I think it's gonna take a minute for him and for all of us to not see him and immediately just see Tony Stark or hear Tony Stark.
I didn't see Tony Stark.
I think it's going to take him a minute to leave that behind, but I think this was a good step in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's better than Christopher, who? It's better than Chris Evans' post-Marvel career, because he did the sweater movie, and then that's it, really.
Yeah.
What was it called? Knives Out.
Knives Out, the sweater movie.
He had Knives Out, and then movies that no one saw.
Yeah, so he is doing better. Actress in a supporting role, Emily Blunt is up against Daniel Brooks, The Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Nyad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers.
Sure.
Boo.
Oh, boo? Straight up boo?
Yeah, it's just so convoluted. It's just like, I really tried to find something that would justify her nomination the second time around. And I was like, okay, you're great, but like, this ain't it. Like, this is not, you're not great in this. Like, again, no fault of her own necessarily, but like, it's just not. And when I think of others comparatively in this year, it's definitely just not. I would kick her out.
I mean, like I said, she did a good job with what she was given, but I have someone I would replace her with, but I'm going to wait till we talk about that movie.
Nice. Best direct. Oh, Anna, that's Emily Blunt.
I feel very middle ground about it. I don't think it was an awful performance. I don't think it was a wonderful performance. I'm okay with her being here because I like her, but I wouldn't be mad if she wasn't. And I wouldn't be mad if she was, you know?
Yeah, fair.
I have no strong opinion on that one.
All right. So in other words, sure.
Why not?
Best director, Christopher Nolan's against Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer from Zone of Interest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's director. If it was writing, but he is a great director. I will give him that. He knows how to direct a movie.
Yeah. He can direct the fuck out of a movie. best cinematography against El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, and Poor Things. Thoughts?
Sure.
yes. I know you just read them out, but I'm drawing a blank.
El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Poor Things.
There's definitely one I think could be in here. But I haven't seen El Conde, so we haven't talked about it yet.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I agree with it being here. I wouldn't take it out to replace it with the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I think it was great. My eyeballs were happy. My photo brain was very happy. The lighting was really good. Yes for me. I'm going reverse. Best adapted screenplay against American Fiction, Barbie, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest.
What was it adapted from? I don't even know.
From his biography.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I haven't read that, so I don't know if the women character is also poorly written. or if maybe Oppenheimer didn't know any people of color either. But it's here because they love him, Christopher Nolan. But it wasn't my favorite.
I'm not mad that it's here. I'm not very good at remembering what's original and what's adapted that's not nominated. So I couldn't tell you if I would want to replace it with anything, but I'm okay with it being here.
Same. I think as far as like the arrangement of the timelines and what parts of the story he chooses to focus on, I think that was well adapted and well paced, well organized. So I think in those terms.
I guess if I look at it as not dialogue, but a story-wise, then okay, yeah, I can see it here. Dialogue, meh. A story, yes.
Mm-hmm. What is this place? This is Los Alamos.
Yeah, dialogue.
Best original score against American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Poor Things.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Are you kidding me with this?
Fuck yeah.
Listen, you cannot hear that score and not feel something.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then you're dead. That's the only explanation for not feeling something from that score. Because Ludwig does not miss. He just does not miss, ever.
I know. He's so good.
There's this quote that has been long remembered in my family of something that my sister's choir director in high school said to her after... the opera singer who did the Nessun Dorma, he was famous for that. His name Pavarotti? Is escaping me. Pavarotti, thank you. He died when my sister was in high school, and so her choir director like pulled up videos and was like talking about him. And she was like, if that doesn't, now I'm gonna fuck it up. If that doesn't light your fire, then your wood is wet. And that's how I feel about this score. It doesn't light your fire. Your wood is wet.
Your brain is broke, basically. You know what? When
wet wood.
Right after I saw the movie, like the next day on my way to work, I just played Can You Hear the Music on loop my whole commute because it was so good. And no matter how many times that I listen to it, I'm like, it's like listening to it all over again. Like, it's just an experience. It's just like, it's so good. And I wish I had better words to articulate it, but it's so fucking good.
It's definitely a score you should listen to with headphones on. Just let it absorb in you. Let it wash over you, because it is just it's a whole feeling. It's more than just music. It's a feeling.
Yes. It was like osmosising into my body. And I was like, there are certain artists that I'm like, it's not enough to just hear it. I want to like feel my entire body to feel this music. And there's certain artists that like I get that from. And this score was one of those things that I was like, I can like in my bones, I feel this music. Like I understand it. I'm feeling it. So fucking good.
On March 8th, it will be available on vinyl.
I'm buying it.
It'll be $70 because it's three records. And then there's also Interstellar is also available on vinyl. It's $45.
I'll pay it. It's fine. Oh my God.
My liver. I don't need it. Give me these records.
Holy shit. I know what I'm buying now.
Yeah. It's a really great, not that I've tried it because I don't run, but it's a really great, I would imagine, a really good workout music as well. Because it hypes you up and it's getting you what's the word? I'm blanking on everything that I know.
it builds,
there you go. It builds to because the climax at the end of the song is just like your brain opens up and like
it's that King of the Hill meme where he's just like floating off of his couch.
Quite literally, yes.
Quite. Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. It's probably gonna win, and I'd be fine with that.
I'd be very happy with that. That'd be very good. Makeup and hairstyling. It's against Skolda, Maestro, where'd it go? Poor Things and Society of Snow.
Sure.
I don't think it did anything spectacular here.
It should have been Barbie here.
Yeah, it should have been Barbie. I already have who I want to win in that category.
Maestro, obviously.
100%. Nose wins all. Yeah, so I don't care that it's here.
I mean, I think literally this just happened like 30 minutes ago. Who of you said that the hair was telling the story? He just changed Crystal, right? Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. That you could tell his age just by his hair. I feel like that's giving, that's worthy of a nomination.
I guess.
Sure. I mean, I don't think that every nomination has to be like super outlandish for it to be functional. The fact that it serves the purpose of the film, that it's working with the storytelling of the film, is serving its purpose. Should it be Barbie? 100%. But I would take everything out of this and put Barbie instead, because Barbie should have won this category.
Yeah.
No contest.
Because Barbie did everything you just said, but also was big and out there and, you know.
Yeah.
The hair was also the story as well.
The hair was very much the story. Yes. Absolutely. Best costume design against Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, and Poor Things.
I know I said I like this movie for the most part, but I keep saying sure. Because, sure, I guess. It was the hat.
You know what? It was also the pants. They like those high-waisted pleated pants. I really want some.
Yeah,
he looks great. I really want some.
Yeah, man. In that color. What I wouldn't give to have some legs. again, there was nothing spectacular here for me. I already have who I think should win. Same. So.
Again, sure.
You know, like you said, we're saying sure a lot, but the ones that we're passionate about, we're passionate about.
Yeah.
These are the ones, like, these ones don't matter.
Like,
I mean, they do, but they don't.
In the context of this movie and in this moment, like, they matter in movies, but.
If there was an award for, sorry.
For best yawn?
Yes, for best yawn. I would take it because I'm going to fall asleep with whatever I watch after this. If there was a best ensemble, that would be, it would be here, obviously.
The SAG has that. The SAG Awards. Who's nominated?
I know, but I feel like it should also be, that's one of the, I feel like that's one of the categories that should be in here as well, because like there's a lot of people that get left out because there's only 5 slots for actor, actress, supporting. So I feel like that would be a good category to have here.
Yeah. So, but who's nominated for the SAG? Do you know?
Oh, one moment.
Okay. That's why I was asking.
But in a couple of years, they'll have the best casting.
Which is interesting to me because, I mean, yeah, there's casting directors, but there's so much, I mean, I don't know everything, but I do know for a fact that sometimes the director can say, oh, come read for us, or the star of the movie who they've greenlit the movie on can say, oh, bring in this person to cast. So, like, who is the actual casting person? I don't know. It feels a little murky to me. I feel like they should have done stunts.
Yeah.
Because it's a team effort. I don't know. I'm happy that it's casting, but I feel like stunts should, because I think I read somewhere that like people in casting have been lobbying for that award for some years now. So they finally got it. So hopefully stunts can do it next, because I think, or like, what's another category? Animated performance should also be a category.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the VO community deserves some love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for real. I guess they can, like, lump in motion capture with animation, but, like, motion capture is actually acting.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Andy Serkis, the king of motion capture. It's literally acting. Like, what's it gonna... Anyways, whatever. I can talk about that forever.
The SAG Awards for cast in a motion picture is American Fiction, Barbie, The Color Purple, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer.
Okay.
So it is in there.
Okay.
Best editing. Did we just talk about that? No. Best editing against Anatomy of Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Poor Things.
I'd say yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying sure for so long.
Editing is so good. So good. Best sound, The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and The Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
I agree, but I have someone else pegged for winner of that.
And best production design against Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, and Poor Things.
Production design, the town they built on other people's land, sure.
Again, give the land back to the native people.
He tried.
Oh, sure he did. He tried so hard.
I'm sure that was factual.
Oh man. Anyways.
Yeah, Anna, I know. Sorry, Joy. Anna, I know how you hate how like biopics aren't truthful the whole way through. How did you feel about this movie in that regard?
I don't know enough to.
Okay. Because I know how upset you were about Tom Hanks and the whole Captain Phillips situation. So.
Yeah, well, I think it's because, you know, those people. Those are smaller stories.
Okay.
That we're choosing to highlight about people. This is like in history books. This is like major part of American history. Knowing who Oppenheimer is and what he's done, I feel like there's so many more people involved. But when you try to tell the story of this heroic man who did this heroic thing, and all the people are like, "Nah, he treated us like shit."
Also, because ultimately, it's not really about him. It's about the test and the bomb and all of that. I mean, yeah, it's Oppenheimer, but, like, I feel like we know more about Captain Phillips than we did Oppenheimer, just because, like you said, it's smaller story, it's smaller scale.
Yeah.
Like, I had a problem with, what's the one, Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, yeah.
Huge problem with that movie.
Yeah.
Because why would you make your character homophobic if he wasn't in real life? That doesn't make any sense.
Idiots.
Anyways, I won't go into that. I'm just going to get mad again.
Oh, that's all of them. Okay, that's all of them. So, rankings. Who's got their rankings?
Oh, shit. I'm ready.
All right, Anna.
Starting at number 6, I have Maestro, followed by Killers of the Flower Moon. In 4th place, we have Holdovers. In 3rd, Barbie. In 2nd, Oppenheimer. And in 1st, Anatomy of a Fall.
Interesting. Cristal, are you ready or shall
I go?
No? Okay. So, in last place, I have Anatomy of a Fall. Then I have Maestro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Barbie, The Holdovers, and Oppenheimer is number 1 today.
I'm doing this on the fly because I completely forgot about this. But I have a feeling this will change because... Okay, fine. Okay, so...
Go!
Okay, so 6 is Killers of the Flower Moon. 5 is Maestro. 4 is The Holdovers. 3 is... Oppenheimer. 2 is Barbie. 1 Anatomy of Fall.
Dang, look, she did it.
I know, that was hard. I have a feeling I'm going to change that next episode, so just
these stay tuned, are so wild, and I love it. I'm living. This is great. I love how different they all are.
I'm stressing out. I need to rewatch I've seen all the movies. I haven't seen Past Lives since it came out, so I'm rewatching that tomorrow or Friday.
It's on streaming now, right?
We can watch it. It's on Paramount Plus, yeah. We can watch it together on Friday if you want to.
We totally can.
That's fine.
I'm stressing about my final ranking. I have so many big thoughts about some of these movies that I'm like, I have no idea how I'm gonna rank these.
Same.
And I have no idea.
I have a feeling it's gonna be a discussion about one of them.
A few of them.
Well, I mean, of what I've seen, I haven't seen everything yet. I feel like there's one that I don't know that we're all going to agree on. It's going to be another Anatomy of Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon situation. I don't know. So we'll see. Teaser for later, I guess.
Ooh, spoiler alert.
This season, I think, is going to leave me with some trauma.
Oh, no.
This season is leaving me with some trauma. Some of these I'm like, I'm never going to watch it.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think I really watch Oscar movies that, like, again, anyway. Not really.
Well, I tend to rewatch things.
Oh, that's true. I forgot. Most people do that. I'm not the weird one who doesn't.
Do most people do that? Let's take a poll. Let's see. We know most people.
People in the chat, let us know, too.
Let us know. Retweet
us. Reply. What do you do?
Yeah, Shari, do you rewatch stuff? Do you not rewatch stuff? Fried Puppy, that. Do you ever rewatch anything?
Wait, we should actually put a poll on our Twitter. We can do that.
Right? And hopefully more than 2 people will respond to it.
Remember but we if did it's last only... time, and it was just me and me who did it and no one else? Yeah. There's 3 people in this podcast, and only 1 person responded.
Wow.
I have no memory of that.
You didn't do it.
Obviously.
We'll put up a poll, see if any of our, you know, only 2 fans will reply to it other than ourselves.
No, we have more. You said, remember? Remember?
We have other followers, so hopefully our other followers are going to follow us also on Twitter.
Okay.
Because I don't think we can put polls on...
Yes, you can.
Yeah, it's a story. Okay. We'll put a poll on Instagram. Oh, my God. I got to post about I got one post. I'm only one post behind. But anyways, yeah, that's Oppenheimer. This is We Have Thoughts. Obviously, we got a lot of them. And I'm so excited to have such a... I love that we have varied perspective and thoughts and likes and dislikes. And that makes it so fun. No hard feelings at all. Like, I know we like our own stuff, but, like, obviously no hard feelings.
Oh, I'm writing slam poetry about you all.
Are you going to be like,
write all the poetry run. No one's going to read it anyway, so you're fine.
just
I think that's kind of thing we should did there. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.